This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Well, we spent a lot of today's show talking about the passing of the great Hank Aaron. Great player, one of the best ever. Not just a Hall of Famer, but an upper echelon Hall of Famer. And the very few times I had interactions with him, what a gentleman. Who just entered a room and, you know, the room stopped. And he had grace and class and elegance about him. But again, I didn't have that much interaction with him. And when I heard the news today, I wanted to talk to Joe Torre, who actually knew Henry Aaron and spent time with Henry Aaron. And the Hall of Famer Joe Torre, former Yankee manager, joins us right now. Joe, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah. We're doing okay. Dad, tell us, what was Henry Aaron really like?
Well, Henry pretty much kept to himself. I mean, it wasn't like he, you know, wouldn't talk or you know, wouldn't joke around. He was a great teammate. I mean, I got to meet him, believe it or not, Michael, as a 16-year-old. My brother Frank was playing for the Braves in the 50s. And, you know, that's when I was first exposed to the Spahns and the Burdettes and Eddie Matthews and Henry and all those guys. So when I did finally become a teammate of theirs, it was a lot more comfortable for me. They took care of Frank's kid brother at that point in time. But, you know, Hank, you know, he was a great player. There's no question about it. And cordial, you know, all the things you talk about, he's very cordial. Very easy to talk to, very open and sharing things he knew about the game and you know, pretty much any other subject you wanted to talk about. But, you know, he wasn't as outgoing as, you know, some of my teammates, but he certainly was, you know, was legitimate as far as caring a great deal about, you know, being a teammate.
Joe, as crazy as it sounds, when you take a look at these numbers, you know him better than a lot of other people that are listening here. Was he actually underrated?
Well, he was underrated, you know, because he came up the same time as, you know, Willie Mays. Willie's a couple of years older than him. In fact, that was the first person when I found out this morning that Hank had passed, I texted Willie because I know he's on the West Coast you know, but Hank, I mean, Willie got all the attention because he's, you know, he played in New York, played for the Giants in New York. He was more of a colorful player. You know, he'd throw the ball from the outfield without a cutoff man because he'd throw right to the base. A lot of what, you know, Clemente did later on. But Henry would be a great right fielder. You know, he'd hit the cutoff, man. He'd do all the things by the book. And, you know, a real good base stealer, even though he didn't, you know, look to steal a lot of bases. He never did it for numbers. He just did it to help you win a game. So he was really underappreciated. I don't know about underappreciated, because if you played against him or for him, you certainly knew the quality of what he brought to the table all the time.
It's amazing to me, Joe, 755 home runs. If you take those away, he still had over 3,000 hits. It is amazing. And I don't think it matters now where you play because it's a small world. But back then, if you played in Milwaukee and Atlanta, I don't think you were going to get the same kind of attention that you would like Willie Mays would in New York or somebody would in L.A. So that probably cost him a little bit of the quote-unquote fame that he would have had with his talent.
Yeah, no question, Michael. And I think it bothered Hank, even though he never talked about it. But, you know, very rarely did you see Hank and Willie at the same function, you know. It was just something that it was nobody's fault. I mean, you know, when Willie Mays plays in New York, you're going to automatically get more notoriety and people are going to know who you are. But, you know, Hank from, you know, people who, as I said, play against them and watch them play on a regular basis. I was privileged to be a teammate of his for 8 years. And it was really remarkable sitting behind him for 8 years and watching how good he was. And, and you know, Michael, you know how the game is played. You get behind in the count, 0-2, and the pitchers are going to make you smell the ball a little bit, move you back off the plate. A lot of those pitches that they tried to throw to Hank, he'd hit in the upper deck because he was so quick. His hands were so quick. He had quick wrists. And I think, you know, he was more of a productive player into his late 30s than Willie was, based on the fact that he was more of a pure hitter than Mays was. I think Mays was just more of a power guy, had longer swing. And Hank was, as I say, he had a shorter swing and you know, a better hitter.
You probably, literally, in terms of distance, were closer to Hank Aaron when he was at the plate than any other human being in his whole career. I mean, you hit behind him for all those years. That must have been awesome. And I can ask you this question that we just asked A-Rod. You see guys now hit 40 home runs, and you're supposed to strike out 220 times. It's accepted. This guy never struck out 100 times in a season. How did he do it? Because he wasn't huge. I believe he was about 6 foot, right?
Yeah, he was 6 foot. He wasn't overly big, and you know, but you know, he started out, Michael. You know, my first time when I was a teenager, I was in Milwaukee, and I was sitting behind the third base dugout, watching Hank at bat, which means I was watching his back, and a pitcher, I don't remember who the pitcher was at that time, threw a pitch, and Hank hit it out of the ballpark. But that wasn't, you know, as surprising as the fact that when I was watching that at bat, I saw the ball when I say behind Hank, it had passed over the plate, and you could see it to the right of Hank's, you know, shoulder.
Wow.
And he was so quick in hitting that ball. He hit it in the right field stands, and that's where he hit a lot of balls early on in his career. He hit it, you know, right field, right center, center field. He really wasn't a pull hitter until, you know, later on when he got to know the pitchers and stuff, and then, of course, he perfected it later on after that. Where he became a nasty pull hitter, where he could handcuff you at third base with no problem.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, I'm perusing some of these stats, Joe, and I get the same feeling that I got when Tom Seaver passed away, on how these things aren't going to happen anymore. He played every game. Yeah. I'm looking in 1963; he had over 700 plate appearances. And does it make you sad too that the game has changed so much analytically that some of these numbers, playing every day, tons of at bats, tons of innings pitched, just aren't going to happen anymore?
Yeah, no, it won't. I mean, we have, you know, built-in off days for, you know, catchers and all that stuff, and that never really existed before. However, you know, I think with all the notoriety nowadays and all the demands on people, I think it's probably tougher to play the game today because of all the demands on these players nowadays. You know, back then it was just the sport you were watching. It's so much more than that now. But as far as, you know, when you think about, you know, weight training came in, I guess, in the when did weight training come in the 60s or 70s, right there? I think it was the 70s, right in the middle of the 70s. Weight training came in. Before that, it was taboo, basically, in baseball. So, you know, the players are stronger and bigger and all the sports, basically. When you think of the big guys under the basket back in the old days, you know, you're 6'9", 6'10", maybe. Now they dribble down the court at 6'9", 6'10". So, you know, it's changed. But, you know, Hank's numbers, he never struck out. And you know, as you say, he played every day, showed up from work. He showed up for work every day, never, you know, and nobody ever talked about being tired. You know, you played double headers, you did all those things. And he was a remarkable athlete. He really was. And the fact that, you know, he breaks Babe Ruth's record, that's the last thing, Michael, if you saw him start out in his career where he was just a line drive type hitter. And, you know, all of a sudden he gradually went into this guy who was, you know, hitting, you know, 40 home runs. But he was something. He was something to watch, I tell you. When you watch from the on-deck circle, as you say, closer to him. I had one funny incident in St. Louis. This was about three ballparks ago in St. Louis. And Kurt Simmons, you know, one of the starters for the Cardinals, he always would throw that slow blooper pitch. And Hank, I mean, it was funny to watch him try to hit against it. You know, he'd swing and the ball would be meekly in the air or nothing, you know, and swing and miss a lot, which he didn't do very often. Well, this one night, Kurt Simmons is pitching, and he throws him that Ephus pitch, and he runs up in the batter's box and hits it on the roof in right field in St. Louis. And I think Bob Uecker was the catcher, and he pointed to the umpire and says he was out of the box. And Chris Pelikoutis, the umpire, called him out.
Ooh.
And Henry pretty much laughed going back to the dugout. I think he was just thrilled that he hit one on the fat spot. On the sweet spot off Kurt Simmons. He didn't care that he was out at this point in time, but that was really a funny incident.
Now, in closing, Joe, I always watch the Hall of Fame induction, and a couple of years ago, I saw you sitting there, and I even commented on the great sunglasses you were wearing, and I just always wanted to be fly on the wall. The conversations you guys must have, sharing this very exclusive club. How sad is it that since the beginning of last year, Joe, 10 Hall of Famers have left us with Henry Aaron today? I mean, it's going to be a stage that's not going to be as populated as it was, and that saddens me as a baseball fan. And for somebody that's in that club, that must be just awful thinking about, Joe, that those 10 guys are not going to be there.
Then, Michael, there's no question. There's going to be a lot of empty seats, you know, and Kaline and Joe Morgan and Phil Niekro and, of course, my teammates, Bob Gibson and Lou Brock and, you know, Seaver. Those days, and I, you know, I'm glad I had a chance to experience it, not only sitting on the stage and having Johnny Bench poke you and tell you how long you spoke, but to have the dinner the night of the induction ceremony and have the dinner with just baseball players. And the stories and the camaraderie and watching Ricky Henderson run around and getting autographs. I mean, it's really something, but it's certainly going to be so different the next time we'll wind up in Cooperstown because there's such a void that's been created. As you mentioned, 10 Hall of Famers, which is unreal, are gone.
Yeah, too many too soon. Thank you, Joe, for sharing some memories of Hank.
No, thank you, Michael.
Thanks so much.
Nice talking to you.
All right.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.